really what I'm trying to articulate is like
right.
you are building your bridges and building those strong ropes of connection to all beings around you in a very real way through tracking. At the same time, they're going deep, penetrating deep inside on an inner landscape.
Hello, friends, and welcome to this fourth episode of my tracking series. That was a clip of my guest, George Leoniak. And in this fourth episode of the series, I sit down with him, George, who is a practitioner, educator, and evaluator of tracking skills, to explore the concept and practice of inner tracking. Through his 20-plus years of tracking and mentoring with some of the world's most skilled trackers, George has gained an in-depth understanding of tracking both the outer and inner landscape. George guides us through the shady and sunny parts of our inner landscapes and along the trails of our souls, unfolding the concepts of how a tracker follows oneself using the same principles they may use to follow a trail, allowing the maker of the trail to reveal him or herself instead of forcing a preconceived idea or projection. George discusses the practice of inner tracking in relation to other traditions of self-inquiry, pointing to inner tracking as a method that utilizes the land and the natural world as a conduit through which to explore the self. We reflect on how tracking, deep nature connection, and inner tracking can facilitate a powerful healing journey as one identifies baggage in their lives and begins letting go of it to move on through the world in a lighter way. George also explains the process of openness, spaciousness, and that where we put our attention and love, our energy flows out and is reciprocated by the world and the people around us. All this and much more. Stay tuned. Welcome to the Wilderness and Wellness Podcast. I'm your host, Ron Wallin. This podcast is an exploration of the ways that people can reconnect to the natural world through bushcraft, naturalist skills, and time spent immersed in the nature they find around and within them. We also discuss how this reconnection can increase our individual well-being and that of our communities and the earth. Thank you for joining me. I'm really glad you're here. Hello, friends. Welcome to the podcast once again. I'm really excited to bring you this discussion I was able to have with really one of the huge titans in the tracking world, George Leoniak. George is the go-to guy for this subject, along with his mentor, Paul Resendez. And so it's just really an honor to be able to sit down with George and flesh out this topic and hopefully everyone could see how amazing this conversation was because I thoroughly enjoyed it, and it was just a lot of fun to really pick his brain and have him kind of flesh out these ideas. But before we get into that, I just kind of wanted to make people aware of some really neat things going on in the tracking world right now. One of them is very time sensitive, so hopefully as many of you get to listen to this and get this information as soon as I put it out. But one thing that's going on is that there is a wildlife tracking conference put on by the Northeast Wildlife Trackers. It's their 2020 conference, and it's all online. And so definitely go check that out. A lot of really amazing people in the tracking world are going to be presenting. You can find a link to that in the show notes here, and or you could just go Google 2020 Northeast Wildlife Trackers Virtual Conference. If you sign up before October 1st, it's like $25. And after October 1st, it's $35. And the event is going to be on, let's see, October 13th through the 16th, course of 2020. And looking at the event schedule, it's going to be packed with just amazing stuff. Amazing topics, amazing people. Casey McFarland is the keynote speaker, but you got people from all kinds of different niches within the tracking world coming on and presenting and just sharing a lot of great information. So I highly, highly recommend checking that out. Another thing that has just come out and is really, really exciting is Lee Guttridge and Kersey Lawrence put out a tracker mentoring course online. It's a correspondence course. And, anyone from a novice to an expert can get on and find their courses and really get a lot out of it. They're based out of South Africa. So a lot of the species that they use are species from Africa. But I communicate with Lee directly, and he assured me that anyone anywhere in the world can get a lot out of this. And so I highly recommend this, especially for beginner trackers or trackers that haven't quite started tracking yet. You know, someone who's interested but kind of wants to get into tracking. You really can't go wrong with having a mentor to begin with that knows what they're talking about, more or less people of the caliber of Lee and Kersey. You definitely won't go wrong with this. And I know they have their beginner course or their introduction to tracking course. It's like $35 American US dollars, which is pennies. It's just peanuts compared to the information you get. I think it's like a 2 month long course, and it's going to be phenomenal. I know it is. So if you're looking for something like that, if you're looking to get into this world and just don't know where to start, that's definitely a great place to start. And that's trackermentoring.com. And then I've got links to it on the show notes as well. So definitely go check that out. You won't be disappointed, I promise. One of the things that's really excited me about this whole COVID thing, you know, there's a lot of negative that comes with it, but with all negative things in life, there's a way to turn those challenges and trials into positives. And one of the great positive things that's come out of all this is the access and the opportunities for learning that we have been blessed with due to this, because people like Lee and Kersey are seeing this as opportunity. And of course, like the Northeast trackers are seeing this as opportunity to change the format a little bit. And if they can't get people to come to them, or they can't be in person to teach people, well, then they'll put it online. And that's actually exactly what Lee said to me when we were talking about it. And actually he messaged me, and this is exactly what he said. He said, the whole lockdown has been odd, but us being us, we made the most of it because of the spare time it gave us. Having no groups to work with, we managed to design and implement a wholly online tracking course. It's unique in that it's designed to be done anywhere with any country species. So you could do it from Johannesburg, Seattle, or the Serengeti. And he said they already have people from all those locations actually doing the course. They use African animals, like I said. But he said, if you can't travel to us, we decided we'll come to you through this brand new program. So definitely go check that out. Check out the Wildlife Tracking Conference online. Again, I mean, you're paying pennies for these things, about as much as you'd pay for a good tracking book, but you're going to get so much more out of it, even than you would get from a lot of tracking books, because you're getting that direct learning from them. Even if it's not in person, you're still getting amazing, amazing value for the price. It's hard to imagine. So definitely check that out and go take advantage of these learning opportunities if this is something that you're really wanting to experience and start or grow in. And that being said, I'll give you a more in-depth introduction of our guest today, Mr. Leoniak. So George Leoniak is an internationally known and certified tracker for over two decades, who has worked and mentored under the giants of tracking, including Paul Resendez, Mark Elbrock, John Young, Charles Worsham, and Tom Brown Jr. In addition, George holds multiple bachelor's degrees in biology and psychology, as well as a master's in conservation biology. His certifications include Senior Tracker Certificate from CyberTracker Conservation, Track and Sign Specialist Certificate, Trailing Specialist Certificate, and Track and Sign Evaluator for CyberTracker Conservation. So George is highly, highly skilled in these areas and knows what he's talking about. So I really hope you enjoy this interview as much as I enjoyed conducting it.
When I grew up in coastal New Jersey, you know, just north of the Pine Barrens. And that's pretty much Tom Brown country down there. You know, right. I mean, very familiar tracker, pretty much one of the leading founders to really make tracking as exponential and get it on people's radars. And, you know, I knew of him when I was down there as a kid growing up. I had to read his book, The Tracker, when I was a student for my freshman year of high school. So that was definitely impactful. And as I was telling you last time, like I still have that book and I love looking back at all the things that I underlined in there and all the stories, the Junko tracks in the snow and finding a skull. And so
it's so cool, you know, that they assigned that as a reading assignment in high school. Like every high school should do that, in my opinion.
Oh, totally. And you know, that's the cool part of the story, because it's kind of like there was this magical thing happening behind the scenes to get me involved in tracking, and I didn't even really know it. I just gravitated to it, because you already kind of know the punchline of the story. But, you know, for people who haven't heard it and listening, you know, that set me on a path to start to explore tracking. You know, with that, reading that book at that high school, they had me practice owl eyes and sensory exercises. And this was a Christian Brothers Academy in Lincroft, New Jersey. I mean, it wasn't like in 1990s. So, you know, now 2020 and over the past 10, 15 years, we've got a lot more wilderness schools showing up on the map. Younger kids are getting exposed to this at a younger age. But back then in New Jersey, there was very little exposure that young people had to tracking and awareness and those types of exercises and games.
Right.
So, you know, I remember Tom Brown, The Tracker, when I moved back up to Vermont, and all of a sudden when I was getting engaged in tracking, Vermont Wilderness School opened up right down the road, and I met the people down here in Brattleboro, and they're like, you're going to this workshop with John Young down in the Pine Barrens. So I was like, great, I'll go check that out. So I go to meet John, and literally the very first opening thing of his lecture was like, or his presentation was, you wouldn't believe it, but, you know, you wouldn't believe it, but Wilderness Awareness School got started in Lincroft, New Jersey at Christian Brothers Academy. And I was like, mind blown at that point. You know, I was like, because that was 7-8 years later. And those little seeds, because John used to teach there, he started these wilderness programs, and he was the one who had the influence to have us read The Tracker.
Right.
And that little seed that he planted there grew in me, so that now 8 years later, all of a sudden, I've come back to sit at a workshop with him. You know?
That's amazing.
And who knows how I would have come to tracking otherwise if it wasn't for that little exposure that I had by chance, let's just say.
Yeah, yeah. You know?
And so that's kind of the story. And then from there, that seed grew, and you know, I spent a lot of time searching out great mentors and trackers from all over the place in the U.S. and some from South Africa that came to visit here once. And you know, just been totally immersed in one spot, living in one spot for over 25 years now, just fully immersed in that landscape and interacting with it like as a tracker would.
Right.
So that's been a big part of the journey, is that long immersion in one spot to let that landscape really just soak into my beingness, you know, and open up that conversation that takes years and years to develop. You know, and then those grow in me. So wherever I go now, that is living in me, that place, and all the things on me. So that's a short little snippet from then to now of how, like, 25, 30 years later, that seed can blossom, you know, and grow.
Right. Yeah. That's really cool. The, you know, I'm just thinking of kind of the, I guess, metaphorical aspect of the synchronicities that brought you to this, and kind of what you're really doing now with it as far as the inner tracking and all that kind of stuff. It's just kind of fun to see. And I guess, you know, we all come to things through series of synchronicities, whether we realize it or not, or recognize it or not. But it's just kind of fun to ponder on the way that you came to it and what you're doing now. So that's a fun story.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I know I said, you know, by chance, quote unquote.
Of course, you know,
I live in the world of by chance, you know?
Right.
When I stand back and look at it now, after being 30 years from reading that book, you know, and then look back at all the little things that have added up, all the people that I met being in the right place at the right time, unbeknownst that that would be the connection at the right point.
Right.
It just kind of, you look back and like, oh, I could see that it was all kind of unfolding, you know, and I was just making choices that go further and further down that right. path as we show up at those places.
This grandmaster plan that you're really cool. unaware of.
Yeah, what's cool. next, right? What's next?
Yeah. So tell us about this idea, this concept, this practice of inner tracking. What does that term mean, inner tracking?
Yes. Now, that's not a term that like I've coined. And Paul Resendez, you know, who you just had an opportunity to spend some time talking to recently, he was the first person, because I guess let's just back up a bit. You know, when you start to explore tracking, you just start to realize how interconnected you are right. to everything around you. You know, you realize that all the birds, all the animals, all the plants, you know, the food, the scats that they're leaving, you know, where the water's coming from, how the landscape is shaped, you know, from geological processes, all interconnected. And so that kind of awareness just grows. As it grows outwardly, it exponentially can start to grow inwardly when we start asking the types of questions that we ask outwardly about the inner landscape. And with the help of Paul Resendez, you know, he was a person of an inner tracker. He knew what type of questions to ask to probe into the inner world just as much as we were doing the outer world. Because he's a tracker, a wildlife tracker, for people who don't know him. Longtime tracker for probably 50 or plus years in the Quabbin Reservoir area. Wrote Animal, what's his book? Tracking the Art of Seeing. And inner tracking for him was all about awareness, observation. You know, it's about observation, awareness, not only externally, but also the inner awareness that comes with that.
Mm. Very good. So it's kind of interesting to ponder, because obviously this is, it seems to me that this is a practice that has been going on likely as long as tracking has, but it never quite had its own little section, so to speak, or box that we've come along. And, you know, that, as you described, Paul has kind of brought out for us. And I suppose that's a, maybe a reflection of something that we've needed in this time, in this day and age, as far as tracking is concerned. Because anciently, mankind would practice this art, I would imagine there was a lot of inner tracking going on in different forms, and people were just doing it. But now, it seems in this day and age where we're so hyper-focused on, you know, the economics of being in this, whatever we have created, this society, we often don't take a lot of time to reflect and to have that inner tracking go on. So it seems a very timely concept to kind of be brought to us in this way. Do you have any insights on that?
Yeah, well, I'm thinking of a way to make this like really simple. Mm-hmm. You know, what's the bridge between how tracking can lead, outer tracking is connected to the inner tracking?
Yeah.
You know, when you're outer tracking, you're dealing with a lot of your assumptions about the world around you. So you start off with the animal track in front of you. I'm just going to talk through that language.
Absolutely.
You start looking at it, and if you jump right away to a projection of what it is, you know, just like that, you know, at the snap of a finger, and you believe what it is that you see, you can easily stop looking at it for more information. Like, what else is it showing me? Is it really a raccoon track that's there just because I think it is, right? So there's a bunch of assumptions and judgments that can be that we can force on something, you know, and then walk away from it and think that we know what it is that we're looking at, or we've summed it up. Now, with trackers, they don't do that usually, because they you know, are in a process of looking more closely and asking more questions and following it out and letting things reveal themselves as they go on, and really don't get too fixed in concepts and ideas that become solid, right? So to become a really proficient tracker, I'm just talking about the skill of tracking here, and I'll bring it to inner tracking in just a moment.
Yeah.
Learning to live with like that sense of curiosity and openness, right? To be okay with the unknown and the mystery that's presenting itself. You don't have to define it and label it and just put it in that box. We can take some time with it and let it, an exploration happen. And that's where real learning happens, in that space, not in how I can project what I know onto something. Now, I think as I frame that there, hopefully you can start to make the connections of like, wow, and this is where those questions come in, is like, how am I doing that process of the labeling, projecting process in other areas of my life? With or my relationships, right? With other people.
Right.
It's an easy bridge because we can see, if we have that inner awareness and we start to see that operating, all of a sudden it's like someone comes to me with an emotional reaction. There's a trigger point. How am I going to respond to that situation with just the labels, the judgments? This is what's presenting itself to me. This is all I see, right? Or is there that spaciousness? Is there that openness to ask some more questions, try to understand, look at it from some different angles, explore it, or just like a track? And when that kind of spaciousness and openness is happening on our interpersonal levels, on all social levels, there's a lot more flexibility to be with the mystery of what's presenting itself and not feel like we have to solve everything in a few moments. You know, be okay with the patience to let it you know, come about on its own. So there's some bridging, right? Of, like if you're out there tracking, you're learning that process. Like you're intuitively engaged in that process. And it's only like a few steps away that starts to integrate with some right questioning and maybe just a switch to start to see how it impacts your life in that way. It's not just about the tracks. It's actually transforming your whole beingness of like how you move in the world.
Right. Yeah. You know, the phrase that I've heard, I've heard you say, I've heard Paul say, and many others, the idea of tracking the tracker, and that's what we're doing when we're in that space. When we learn, and let me sum it up to make sure I understand what you're saying. When we're learning to track, we're learning how to see things in a certain way, how to let things unfold, how to let the track reveal itself to us. And in that same vein, as we learn that particular art of questioning, as the way you put it, is it's only a few steps away to apply that same, what's the word, strategy, so to speak, to ourselves, to see how we are moving in the world and interacting and with ourselves, with the people around us, the things around us, and all that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. I mean, and from a few steps away. So I went from like your social interactions, you know, to the people around you. So, but then we have that tracker inside of us, right? We have those same types of assumptions about ourselves that operate. So now see how many more steps it's gone in there.
Right?
So now it's gone like, what is it about my, my way of seeing the world, right? What are the assumptions that I live by? What are the beliefs that I have?
Right.
And like, what are the identity structures that I've created around myself to help reinforce that image, right? So that's when, you know, when the tracker is tracking the tracker, you basically are asking like, well, who is this person who now thinks that they're the tracker? Right? Because tracking is cool, but it's so easy to become totally identified with that notion that Well, I've left those other identities. I've learned a lot about assumptions and judgments and all this, but now I'm a tracker, right?
Right.
See how that process can keep going on. It doesn't want to give up easily, you know?
Right.
But
right.
when all of a sudden the tracker meets the tracker and they're looking at each other, and it's inside here, it's inside your head.
Of course.
Two are looking at each other. It just blows up, right? It sees something in that dichotomy, dichotomous process, you know, that division that's happening, that the tracker is actually tracking itself after a while.
Hmm.
And there's a lot of energy that's going into the tracker tracking itself. So picture a tracker following a trail, and they're going around the trail, and it's their own footsteps, right? And they're going around trying to find themselves within that until you almost hit the mirror and you're like, holy smokes, I've been tracking myself that whole time.
That's a great imagery. I love that.
I mean, that's kind of what it's like, because when you see that process happening, that you actually are tracking yourself because you've re-identified with the tracker, then the notion of even being a tracker blows up, right? So you let go of that. So you don't, it becomes less about that identifying process, because the tracking journey has led you so deep into understanding what that, what that labeling process does. And it really can start off with that raccoon track, because right there, you're already starting to label. Then it goes, you know, to summarize what I'm saying, then it goes to like the people around me, I'm labeling them, right? So you're dealing with your social interaction, organizations or political systems, everything is labeled in through those ways. And then we go even further into our inner world of like, what, why am I doing that? Like, who's the person who's identifying with all those things? What structures have I built around myself? Hmm. And then you're like, the hell with it, all that. I'll just be a tracker. And then you're like, that's the same thing.
Back to square one.
So I'm just going to go look at raccoon tracks and that's it. It's that simple. I'll just deal with that. Now, that's a joke, but you see what I'm talking about.
Of course,
That's inner tracking through what we perceive as outer tracking. And then the world of inner and outer, this is really key, that world between our inner and outer tracking, there's no difference anymore between two extremities, right? They're happening simultaneously.
Right, they merge.
Yeah. Because when they're separate, we have that little dichotomous thing happening between the two. And that's kind of what it is. It's a very like two sides of the same coin, but instead of the coin being like my palms way out here, they come closer and closer and closer together. So it's more in the middle way, that you don't see the separation between one or the other happening.
Right.
In one moment. So that's kind of a quick deep dive into that merger process. And tracking, let's just sum it up, it's like only one methodology that helps can guide people to this. This is one that's really resonated with me. You know,
right.
A lot of meditation practices, Eastern practices that are talking about the same thing. You know, Zen Buddhism, different monastic traditions, all of them. This is the type of awareness that they're talking about and pointing towards.
Right,
and that happens to be how it integrates, or how I found it to integrate with mentors and people guiding me along this path, of how it kind of coalesces into this field of tracking. And it's not like a new thing, because I'm quite sure, I'm speculating that the elder ancient ancestors of tracking, you know, going way back, that this awareness just emerged intuitively, because it just seems to be a natural byproduct of that journey. You know, it's not like a philosophical discussion we're having here. It's just kind of becomes a natural process of like, who am I?
Yeah, it's just the next step in that journey.
Yeah.
Interesting. So using, you know, you touched on how you know, this is not a new thing. It's something that's been developed and looked at for millennia. Is there a uniqueness that this lens and this perspective brings?
Uniqueness. Well, you know, I think in our modern era, the thing that's unique about it, because we have a lot of meditative processes, a lot of Eastern traditions, which have a strong emphasis on that, you know, self-inquiry. Mm. You know, there's a movement out there in other, you know, called non-dualism and kind of getting to that center point, you know, where you kind of separate between seeing things in a divisive way.
Right.
So the unique thing about tracking and how this operates is that it's doing so with a really strong connection to the natural world. Mm. I mean, you could sit in the meditation and do all spiritual Zen Buddhism practice, and you're connecting deeply and intimately with the world, you know, and compassionately with all our life forces and beings. But at least for me, you know, and I'm aware and connected to all those traditions, you know, and I see how they all blend in beautifully because I'm a student of everything.
Right.
The one that's been so different for me that I felt that I have carried with me is that grounded connection intimately, like I said in the beginning, with this landscape that has grown with me and learning through it, like with the influence of the tracking and awareness and observation skills that merge so beautifully and with all those meditative processes or all those self-inquiry dialogues and discussions that people will do. Because I think what can happen is that through the spirituality and developing those avenues of mindfulness, it's still easy to become disconnected, even though you are connecting deeply to everything around you. How to go about integrating that into a real felt sense connection, right? With the bird language, with the bird alarms, the energies that's moving between the living, breathing system, you know, the trees, and just right. Know that landscape. So you feel like you're home, right? Not just home in your mindset, but your home in this earth.
Right.
As well as feeling deeply, intimately connected on a slowing down to the pace that the earth moves at and having that deep sense of inner awareness at the same time. Hmm. So I don't want to say that's unique, because I think if you go back in like maybe ancient cultures that had that deep connection to the land at the same time, but in our modern context where we're coming from a kind of, at least in Western culture, some disconnection from our natural landscape, but at the same time, like thirsting for that like spiritual connection, and two are linked, you know, so people are looking to slow down. They're looking to find peace, ease of relaxation in the mind, and Eastern traditions have great tools for that. And there's this beautiful tapestry that we live within, the natural world around us. And the tracking has an ability to have both those things happening simultaneously. So you're growing on the outer, you know, developing your ropes of connection to the beings around you,
right,
as you're growing inner at the same time. Hmm. So that's the best way. I know I made a rambled on there a little bit trying to get to that final little piece, but that's really what I'm trying to articulate is like,
right,
you are building your bridges and building those strong ropes of connection to all beings around you in a very real way through tracking. At the same time, they're going deep, penetrating deep inside on the inner landscape, like I was discussing before.
Right. Yeah, thank you for that. I think, you know, I kind of had a rambling thought there earlier that I was talking about, you know, ancient humankind using this and then how it's, you know, you and Paul have kind of brought it into the modern day. And yeah, you kind of completed that thought for me in my mind, it's a very timely thing, you know, where in our modern day, the blending of the those traditions of the nature connection, but also the interconnection. Like, it's just a perfect way to do that. So that's great. That's perfect.
Yeah, it's really, I think it's really important for our time right now.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, because especially in the situation we're all dealing with now, people are wanting to ground in the realness of things, you know, and getting back to that deep nature connection. At the same time, finding that inner sense of serenity and peace that comes with that, or learning about yourself, right, and what makes you tick, you know, what sets you off, and doing that in a way that is also helping to develop that connection, that deep nature connection. But remember, this is the key part. When we say deep nature connection, we have to remember we are nature.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, some that most people have probably listened to that are probably like, oh yeah. I went through that phase a long time ago. But for people who might not feel like you're interconnected at that level, or there's a disconnection between that,
right,
you are nature. So when we say deep nature connection, it automatically implies you are deep nature connection yourself. Right.
So connect,
and deep nature connection comes from within, you know. So when we transform inwardly, we are transforming outwardly, you know, and everything that we start to synchronize with starts to be like a feedback loop. So we start to live in that kind of interconnected world, and it really wells up. So the two-way communication becomes very palpable as a fully lived experience. Deep nature connection, because we are nature. When we start to resonate with that field of the natural world, it sets off all those latent senses within us that haven't been fully activated, right, and we integrate our naturalness into our beingness, being natural, and it's a totally natural process. It's like, we're totally built for this. It's nothing like we have to put on a new way of thinking or believing about things. Mostly, we have to let some of those patterns just dissolve away, right? The previous ways of thinking that have been kind of how we've been going about things, in whether societal pressures have been there, you know, whatever structures have been in place that when we've adopted of like, this is how we are, that stuff starts dissolving away through all the nature connection and the practices you can do in connecting with nature and inward practices. So let that stuff just start to go, because it will atrophy on its own. The only thing that's giving that strength is us. You know, we can continue to hold on to that and give it strength, the identity, these structures that are attached to those things that don't want to let go. They will let go on their own with no force at all. So, you know, a big part of this is like tracking can really, and this whole experience I'm describing is like part of the healing process as well, because there needs to be at the same time a healing process that goes on as those things let go, right? And, you know, this past summer, I was sitting on my porch. I was like, why did I really explore tracking to this depth? Why did I get into it so much? It's like, yeah, I love the animals. I love learning. I love the mystery. I love the curiosity. A part of it was a healing journey, you know, to let the things that I had accumulated and picked up, the baggage along the way that I didn't even realize I was carrying, let nature start to dissolve that. And find the guides and the mentors and the teachers out there who know about, who've left some baggage away. You know, they've let go of some baggage that help bring you a little further down that path so you get lighter, right? When you get lighter, you have that expansive quality starting to happen, and that openness starts to be more and more who you are in the world, because you're lighter. You're not carrying all the baggage. So that's part of the healing journey, is the way I'll describe that.
So talking about the baggage, let me see if I can formulate this question. Is it necessary to identify the baggage for for the natural world to then be able to heal it? Is that part of the inner tracking journey, is identifying it? Or do you not necessarily have to identify it, but nature will still heal it? It will.
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, it's, you know, if you think of a tracker, when they go out to look for stuff, you often think that they're going out to identify stuff and point it out and find it, like with the kind of attentive quality, and maybe almost like I'm looking and searching for something to find. Right. And that's really not what I'm talking about. Right. I'm talking more a little bit in terms of your question, a little bit more of a passive approach to when that stuff comes up, the baggage, because it will.
Right.
Come up, right? That's just what's happening now in that moment. Like, wow, all of a sudden I'm being like a jerk. You know, why am I being a jerk? Or, you know, it's just like that raccoon track. I thought I was a raccoon track. All of a sudden now I'm being a bobcat. You know?
Yeah.
Like, or I'm a deer track, you know, something, you know, gentle. And all of a sudden now it turns into like, wow, it turned out to be a bear track or something like that. Something, you know, we can learn that about ourselves and just keep following the trail without having to then go searching for it. Like, it's part of the revealing process in a way that isn't trying to go in there with a wrench to fix anything.
I see. So we're not forcing it. We're not going in looking for the baggage. We're just going in allowing the baggage to show itself.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Because we have countless opportunities every day to see the baggage show up.
Absolutely.
It's, are we attuned to that inner awareness to be able to catch it in the observation rather than it just going as a rote response?
Right.
So when we have the spaciousness starting to operate, then all of a sudden we're seeing the baggage there. And if we then realize that, wow, baggage is showing up, do I have to pick that up and carry it with me still? Right? Do I have, I have the choice then all of a sudden? I might have a choice if observation awareness is showing up. Like, you know what? I don't have to pick up that baggage and carry it with me anymore because I see that that's not serving me anymore. Right? So all of a sudden, you see the baggage and you're like, huh, that changes everything. Hmm. You see how that changed everything? Because the awareness and observation and spaciousness that starts operating in you basically says, oh, I'm going to leave that behind. Some new response is going to come out, you know, that didn't exist prior to that. But I didn't have to go in there and sit in my meditation and be like, huh, I wonder what baggage I can find today. You know, what's in there? Because right. I just wait for it to show up and reveal itself. And there's the opportunity. And even if it does show up in meditation, you know, most people say in classic meditation styles, and just let that stuff come and go, right? Don't focus on it.
Right.
You know, so there is a dissolving process that's happening there. You just want to know whether you're putting that effort to try and find and search and pick up. Because there is something that loves to stay alive, and it's that tracker who continues to follow himself around, who will continually want to find something because that's what keeps it alive. You know, like if I could find something else out about myself, then I'm actively engaging in the process of defining myself as that baggage.
Right.
You know, so I don't recommend anything, but at least of what I've observed is like that the baggage will show up on its own, you know, and the opportunities exist for that awareness and observation to show up in that openness when the baggage shows up. And that has the opportunity to change the circumstances of how you interact with the baggage and in the situation you're in.
Right. How does one know that the baggage has come up? What are the signs?
Yeah, that's a good question because it's not just a question of the mind. The mind very little can catch on to what's happening.
Right,
you know?
Right.
It often wants to control a situation, right? You can, this is where your body, you know, and its body radar starts to feel like, what are the sensations that are happening in the body, right? Is there that gut feeling, you know, is the armpit starting to sweat? You know, is there a heightened sense of blood pressure? Like all these other signals, you know, that are happening around us on a lot of other levels too, than just these physical sensations of what's happening. That is all information to know that that baggage has arrived. Right. And even before the words are even spoken, sometimes there's already the felt energetic sense. And, you know, we can get into the intuition part of things, right? Or the kind of felt sense, like most people can probably relate to this. You walk into a room, you can automatically feel something feels off with someone's feeling down or depressed or something like that. Right. But there's an energetic feeling, and tracking turns you into that empathetic feeling mode where you can experience things through your body, and you just get that felt sensation that there is that field of energy that is making, you know, that you're picking up on. And that could be right there a trigger for you to examine, like, do I just avoid that? Do I not confront it? Do I not talk about it? Do I engage it in a gentle way, compassionately? You know, how your body's relating to that. So there's a tremendous amount of information that is we're receiving through a lot of our faculties, you know, through all our being,
right,
that are way more than just operating in what we think is happening. So the mind is going to process all that sort of stuff, you know. But that's if the mind is existing more and more in the spaciousness thing of things, then it's able to do so in kind of a different way than habitual routed patterns that are in the mind. See, the mind is easy to pattern. You know, right. The thinking process is easy
part
to
of the problem.
Right? Like you start doing something 2 weeks straight. I think there may be something like if you do any activity for 2 weeks straight, it can create a new bad brain pattern.
Right.
So if you, you know, wake up and do certain routines every morning, like stretch or something, you know, 2 weeks of doing that, you're going to build in that pattern and your body's going to be like, wow, that feels good when I do that. Or you can do something else. You could wake up and go straight on the computer and start, you know, checking Facebook right away. That's another pattern. Right.
It's
not going to label what patterns are good or not, but we'll start to know energetically, like how we feel after certain things that feel more enlivening and invigorating. Not that we have to limit our exposure to things. We just start to make some good judgments about what's making me feel at my optimal state of health.
Right. Interesting.
So just let me finish that up, because like the mind, the brain can get into those ruts and into those patterns, right? So if it gets into the rutted patterns on emotional levels, on all sorts of levels, you know, not just physical activities we do, the ability to, for the tracking and the awareness and the observation and all those things is to help get those patterns to exist in more spaciousness, in the openness. So that all of a sudden, rather than the pattern, the predetermined habitual pattern going off, all of a sudden it exists at the same time within that spaciousness. It always has, but all of a sudden that spaciousness is brought to that habitual pattern in a way that allows it to give it just enough room to make a different choice in that moment, you know, learn something new, you know, and that's where learning, like I said, way back in the beginning, that's where learning takes place. It doesn't take place in the repetitive pattern. It takes place in the spacious spots, in the open spots.
When you say the open spots, are you referring to the openness of the tracker, the openness of the individual to allow that to come forth and to observe it without judgment, maybe?
Yeah, it's like that. I mean, the open spots are kind of like the negative space that surrounds everything. You know, I love when we look at tracks, we often focus on like detailed spots of things, but there's all the negative space, the open spaces around it that are actually making the track. You know, when we flip our awareness from like looking at a tree to looking at all the shapes between the trees, right? You know, all the branches that make all these other patterns. times.
Right.
So we're able to like flip-flop our awareness internally. These are external examples of this, to have it rather than focus on like, that's a tree, to like, that's a tree existing in all this space that's around. And when I'm looking at that tree, I'm taking in now the whole view of the tree, including all those gaps, all the space between it. And the tree is actually existing in that space. You know, it is of that space too. So when we have that kind of operating in our minds, that spaciousness, it always exists. It's that the habitual pattern becomes such the norm that we don't actually realize that that open quality is there the whole time. So when we start to, what's the best way to say this? I don't want to say connect to, but when that openness starts to emerge in someone, there's going to be the ability to see things showing up in the openness, right? You're going to see like that response coming up in the openness, or that reaction coming up in that openness. Before, all there was the habitual reaction response, right? Habitual reaction. Right. Now all of a sudden, there's this little window of openness around that reaction that all of a sudden says, you know what, I think I'm going to, there's going to be something else. You don't have to choose anything, but something else that allows just a slow, it's like a little monkey wrench in the gears to slow it down just enough to alter the situation that's going to play itself out. And how that like happens or where that is achieved, you can't really quite make a definitive answer to that question.
Right.
Because openness exists. Everything is existing in that quality of space. And you can't really make that happen. That's the thing. It's the mind cannot make that openness happen. It likes to think it can make the openness happen. But there's this quality that's existing that the mind, the thought process, let's just say, cannot make happen.
Right.
It just has to be a quality that exists. And that quality just happens on its own. It grows on its own, you know, through so many different types of things. I mean, it doesn't grow. It's just there. That's all I could say. But like sitting outside underneath the tree, you're going to start to feel it. It's like there's going to be transformations starting to take place through either tracking or mindfulness meditation or, you know, doing any activity that you're bringing your attention to, you know, your observation, and it's all showing up. You could be working at the grocery shop. And these are not things that are like just tracking or mindfulness. It's totally applicable to every life circumstance that we're in, because that openness pervades and is within everything. We just haven't been able to slow down enough to actually realize that it's been with us. That's been with us the whole time.
So could it be likened to the openness to becoming the observer?
Yes. So describe to me what you mean by the observer.
So the observer would be the I, if you will, the eternal self that's watching the thinker.
Yeah. Now there's a famous quote, you know, that is like Jiddu Krishnamurti and Paul brings up a lot. It's like the observer is the observed, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the dichotomous piece there, right? That you start to realize that the observer is actually the observing itself, right? Because it's that split there. So when you say, yes, it is the observer, it is that level, it's that consciousness that exists in all of us, if you want to call it that, that awareness that fundamentally is residing in everything. Mm-hmm. And that's what that space is. Right, that I'm trying to describe is just the most simplistic term is like that openness, because you can't really define openness, right?
Right.
It's so tricky when we start to label or categorize or define what openness is. If I start identifying with openness, right? Let's say, okay, I'm a tracker for a little bit, and the tracker is equated to openness. So I'll call myself a tracker. But if I drop tracker and then say, oh, yeah, you know, I'm openness, right? Identifying with openness is just like still part of the game. It doesn't matter. When that happens, it's like, well, hey, I don't have to play that game anymore. I can call myself a tracker with that, knowing that this process happens and that there's no egocentric attachment now being associated with the notion of being a tracker.
Right.
It's just a byproduct of socially engaging with people and knowing that this is the skill sets that I have. And these are the things that I like to talk about and engage in, and part of my life has led me to these things, and that's so on and so forth. But that openness quality, that contains the tracking, that contains the tracker. And for the tracker then to now identify and say, I'm just openness, as soon as you say that, you have to throw that title out of the way, because everything that gets into openness, it's like a black hole.
Right. Just sucks you know, in.
If that's what's operating you as that black hole, then any notion that starts to want to self-identify and label with that goes. That doesn't mean like I just sit here and just look at you. Hey, some people do that, you know, and they've reached, you know, I don't want to say they've reached that state, but that's their expression that's moving through them that feel like is what they need to do with their life, you know, and they could be communicating the same type of thing.
Right.
That's totally cool. This is my expression. That's your expression. Whatever that's going to be, we all know, you know, we can all know that that openness is who we are. It's what's pervading through all of us. And we're just these awesome, unique expressions, you know, that don't have to fight over all these concepts to get in the way.
Right.
You know, all the ideologies that we follow or the different belief systems that we have. I'm not just talking small little community structures, which that happens with already. You know, we got a big global situation, you know, in meltdown around different belief systems, you know, that tear people apart.
Yeah.
And it all stems back to like this deep disconnection from this quality of meeting people in that openness and curiosity and that real path, compassion. And, you know, the best word you can sum it off of is like, you know, another big word is like there's real love that shows up in interactions at that point, because it goes past the sentimental, emotional love that we know.
Right.
It shows up. It's just that ultimate love, you know, is a really good way to describe it. That's giving it a quality more than openness, because it has an activity, it has an energy to it that is more than just that black hole. See, out of that black hole is also emanating everything. There's that creative expression that's coming with that black hole. It's not just this void of nothingness.
Interesting. So as one begins to practice inner tracking and practice these ideas, what benefits can they expect to come into their lives? Or perhaps let me phrase it this way. I assume you have seen people start and go down this path and this journey. What benefits have you seen come into the lives of people that do that?
Yeah. So, you know, I've got like people coming to my mind that I've seen some real major transformations with, right? I mean, I've seen some pretty, rigid structures, you know, of, you know, people who have got an idea of how things work, you know, in not only in like tracking and like the nature observation, but just in the relationships in the world, they've got a sense figured out. Some of these people are older, so they've got a lot of experience routed in there. And I tell you, after year of tracking with some of these same people, I've just watched how that lessens more and more. So at first it's like they're seeing that malfunctioning process happen with the tracks and they're like scratching their head like, wow, I thought I had things figured out, you know, and they're seeing that with the tracks. So that's good. You know, right. First there might be defenses. There might be all sorts of fight and argument about tracks. You know, simple as it is tracks leads to some sometimes pretty heavy duty arguments about who's right and who's wrong.
Right.
See that macrocosmic division, like on the global scale, happening around animal tracks. Right. And that's fascinating because we can see how it goes all the way from that macrocosmic huge track we're dealing with to like a little print in the ground. It's like smaller than a mouse.
Right.
So we start off there and like, you know, we're having a discussion about the tracks, and the more we operate in like we're having a discussion, and we do this over and over again, you know, for a year or so, all of a sudden it's like, wow, I can learn something not only from you, but I'm learning something about myself and about those rigid structures, about how I thought I had figured out about these tracks. So like another year, a couple of years go by. And this doesn't have to be a year process. You know, for some people it could be quite quick. Some people it could take a little while. So then all of a sudden those questions go, just like I described before, they start to go in like seeing those social interactions, like, you know, because my questions that I'm bringing up, the mentors have brought to me, are starting to bring it to like, how is that showing up in your relationships, you know, with your views and assumptions about those people that push your buttons, you know, that you have, your neighbor, right? That you have some, that person just drives me nuts. Why does that person drive me nuts, right? So they start to ask those questions about those sort of things. Right? And then all of a sudden it goes a little deeper, you know, into like, wow, how much am I actually really the source for that? Oh. Right? Is it, you know, am I really the source? Is the neighbor doing that? Yeah, they're doing something, but what is it about me that's reacting to that situation in that context? But you see, at that point, they've loosened up that rigid structure so much, starting with that mouse track, right? You know, and seeing mouse track and coyote track that became a dog track that became, you know, a deer track. Wow, I couldn't believe, you know, moose track was actually a rabbit track. I mean, that's like a big look.
Yeah. Right.
When you're looking at a moose track and it was actually a rabbit and you are dead certain that you think that it's a rabbit, I mean, a moose and it's a rabbit, you're like, you're shooken up. Your worldview shooken up. And right. If you've been tracking for 10, 20 years and you've made it a call that it was a moose, you're blown away. So that's what's happening though at these other levels with people in their inner world. So picture that little eruption happening inside someone when they feel that same type of sensation, like, I've been acting like a freaking moose track this whole time, and I've been a rabbit, you know, it's like that same type of feeling. It's like,
right.
Oh my gosh, I didn't see that stuff about myself, you know, and then, you know, self-pity can come in, but then when you see you're fueling the self-pity with the same type of thing, you're just like, oh my gosh, I just got, you know, this stuff just got to let go. What do I do? You know, you can start freaking out because there's so much that's got to let go. But because of all that experience you've had that you observed and what happened in tracking, there's kind of like, it's not, it could kind of happen organically without a huge freak out because you're used to this by now, right? You're used to being humbled in that way.
Right.
So you're used to being humbled that way, and your ego's taking that hit. It's no different when it happens at the deeper levels, although some of it can be quite quite revealing, quite tumultuous at that point, because now we're dealing with like the deep-seated, rooted belief systems of how I've seen the world for 50-plus, 60-plus years.
Right.
So why is that a benefit? I mean, that's your question. Like, why is that a benefit? Right?
Well, let me see if I can.
Okay, you summarize it.
Yeah, well, I don't know that I can summarize it, but I kind of see where it ties back to our discussion on openness. Like, that's the process of becoming more open. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It's, you know, it's tricky words because it's like, you're becoming the openness that already has existed.
Right.
You know, only a veil, like more filament, more dirt. You know, there's a nice example of like, you take a glass of water, you pour a bunch of dirt in it, you shake up all that dirt, right? And it's swirling around in the water. All the particles are there. That water is not murky. So as you just let the water sit, all those sediments, which is the clogging the ability to see clearly through the, into the water, that stuff just starts to sink. The heavier ones drop out first because they're the most obvious, right? And then the lighter and lighter particles settle down towards the bottom. And all that just turns into like this mud at the bottom. Well, now all of a sudden there's this clarity up above. All those other experiences are still there, and that's where your wisdom lies, right? Because you have a lot of life's experiences of all these wild-ass crazy mistakes you've like made your life. You could see all that happening. Like, why did I act like this in this situation?
Oh, like, oh, that's why. Over again. Yeah.
You know, because you let all that just settle out to bottom. You know, it just settles out, and that's why you can't make that process of the dirt settling to the bottom of the water happen any quicker, right? It just is a natural process that happens kind of effortlessly.
Right.
But you have to stop shaking the bottle.
Yeah, you have to be still long enough to let it happen.
Right. You got to stop shaking the glass. And we have, that's when you start to see that you're getting clearer, the water's getting clearer. You're like, wow, life has changed a little bit when I stop shaking the glass so much. So you stop shaking it a little more and you stop shaking it. And then you're like, life's going a lot better if I'm not shaking the glass at all. But I'm still getting lots of stuff done. I'm meeting people and engaging and feel a lot lighter and freer. So, geez, why did I like shaking that glass so much? Added a lot of excitement. But not in the type of excitement that might have been really the best health of everybody involved in the situation or the planets.
Right.
You know, on a lot of levels.
And that goes back to the benefits. I mean, who doesn't want to be freer, more connected, you know, with less stress and all that comes with shaking the bottle, shaking the glass, you know? Yeah, that's it's a huge, it's what? I'm sorry.
It's a huge benefit, isn't it? I mean,
oh, absolutely.
It's a simple benefit too. It's like a, it's a birthright benefit, you know, that just exists.
Yep. And it's, I feel like it's what we're all looking for. And it's what our society is missing so much, I believe, because I think we're preconditioned to really shake the glass. And I don't know that we're unique in that in the history of the world or anything like that, but I feel in a lot of ways, mankind is preconditioned to shake the glass because that's what keeps kind of what we were talking about earlier, the whatever you want to call it, the ego, that's how it feels it needs to survive, you know, is to shake the glass.
That's totally right. I mean, you know, another way to think about this is like a lot of the ways we think how we can achieve harmony in the past have been a kind of a confrontational type of way. You know, we're striving to kind of sometimes create harmony in situations, actually moving through a conflicting situation. And that is like when our mind is very engaged in how harmony is supposed to take place. Mm. If we drop down, just let things relax a little bit, entertain the motion of having a little bit more space within the situations, then we're stopped infusing, trying to find harmonious situations to keep aggravating situations.
Right. And bringing that back to the concept of the macrocosm, you know, this idea that we have to, and not we as in the United States, but really any country has to go in and influence what's going on elsewhere to create a situation of peace or whatever, you know, whatever they think they're doing. Seems like a similar thing.
Yeah. You can expand everything we've been talking about to any scale that you want to look at.
Right. And that's fractals.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I deal a lot with that type of geometry stuff and new modern physics that you more modern physics that we're dealing with now in 2020, just how interconnected we are. And you can look at it from the science, and the science is even proving and backing it up more and more and more. And it's definitely like we're in the midst of a huge paradigm shift. And one of my key key driving influences at this point is to help bring tracking. Tracking will always be there, but how does it fit into our context now, right? How is it, all these benefits that I've just been describing to you, how does it play its part in that kind of transformative process that's happening within the consciousness of humanity? You know, I know it has such a deep-rooted ancestral piece with us, you know, way back from hunter-gatherer cultures. And when we think hunter-gatherer, automatically we just put the tracking in a box of like, oh, we're just about hunting and gathering, right? But you see, there's this other component that is totally applicable. And even this hunting and gathering skills are still applicable. But this other component of like this way of beingness, the interconnectedness, the way of relating in the world and relationships with others, self, the planet, all that has is part of tracking, which is part of that openness. And it's just another slice of that pie, right? Another window of entry that allows people who gravitate towards that path, you know, that leads them into deeper and deeper levels of interconnectedness with themselves and all things.
It makes me think of, you know, talking about what you were just saying with the hunter-gatherer, you know, the tracking feeds the body through the hunting and gathering, but it can also feed the soul and the spirit through, you know, what you were just saying.
That's a huge part, and I'm really appreciative that you brought that up, because it is, you know, connecting deeply with that soul energy, you know, that we are, right? So that soul is operating much more on that level of openness, and it's the limits of our personalities that get in the way of that full expression,
right,
and embodiment of that unique expression that moves through us, you know, that has a purpose. You know, it's not just that nothingness, like I'm saying. We have beautiful beings that are, you know, abilities to create and work together to come up with all sorts of new inventions, creative solutions to all sorts of situations that we're in. You know, and if we do together, working from our higher, you know, our higher wisdom, you know, from that soul's purpose, and we're doing so in such a more harmonious, effective way to move things forward, because we're not thinking then individually as limited personalities. And the soul, you know, is connected to all the past, all the future, you know, so we're bringing the past, the present, and the future all together. So obviously we're thinking about all those souls that are coming, that have been, that we are, and we're not disconnected from this continuum of life. And, you know, these are all part of the path that tracking, at least for me, has encompassed all those wisdom teachings, you know, past, present, and future. Right. So that thread runs right through it all.
Absolutely. So what's something, you know, we've talked a lot about how to notice things and how to kind of move through the inner tracking piece. What's maybe one easy practical thing that people can do to kind of take the first step on that path?
Yeah, there's so many little opportunities like to do that. I mean, one that I like to do is to break the chain of what we do normally, like the habitual pattern. So even like if you're just sitting there and you take your, you know, look at your palm of your hand, you know, if you're just looking at the palm of your hand, as it were, not even thinking it's your hand or palm, you know, you're just then looking at all the detail that's in your palm. You know, look at all the lines, the shapes that are there, the colors that represent themselves, and just get lost in that non-knowingness of what it is you're observing and trying to label it, right? And you can do that with, like, everything and anything. So it's You can do that with your hearing, you know, try and hear the furthest sound that's away from you, sounds that are close up, sense of smell, sense of touch, you know, get into the senses, you know. And I really like the one with the hand and the eyes, because we'll start to notice things that you wouldn't quite notice before, because there's so many things we start to just like take for granted that we have these amazing, beautiful hands that do so much for us. But how often do we actually take the time to like really study it intently and like look at how your fingerprint spirals out, right? Look at the shapes that are on there. Because tracking is a lot about fingerprints.
Right? Absolutely.
You know that? Yep. Coyote goes by in a nice slick mud, you know, it's beautiful to see when you can see, wow, the coyote's got a little fingerprint that looks like little dots all over it. So I'm just studying my fingerprint here. And you look at the shapes, the edges, the lines, and you don't try to have to lock into anything to say, I'm looking at my hand.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Just lose yourself in that awareness and observation. Hmm. And you'll find right away that like you'll just slow down inside to do that, you know, and you're just exploring and looking and observing without trying to come up with any insights or anything. And that's just a repeatable process that you can do with everything and anything around you at any time, anywhere, any place.
Always with you.
You just drop in and just start to notice the textures of things. Like I'm looking at the paint on the wall right now, which is yellow paint, you know, and there's a texture there as the brush went across. It's, you know, all ridgy and bump, you know, got these little bumps on it. So now I'm looking at texture and one spot picks out a little more than others. And, you know, you're looking at the light reflecting off the mirror. And when you're doing that, you're slowing down the mind that's going through what I just described to you and just totally absorbing the light and information that's there. And if you're in a heated conversation with someone and all of a sudden you drop into that awareness of just seeing them for what it is there in front of you without trying to process every word that they're saying and how am I going to respond to this, and just see the hair, see the eye, see the mouth, the nose, the colors, that are, the faces, you know, what they're wearing, shapes, the space that's around them. And you drop into that type of awareness and the type of conversation that feels a little heated, something can shift there. Because all of a sudden, you just went from like all that inner energy that's welling up into you to one that has just dropped into a totally different rhythm of space. Right.
Interrupted the pattern.
And by doing these little activities that I'm talking about with the hand and doing all, you know, having the potential to do that all the time, that is starting to build that little bit of that spaciousness pattern, right? Mm. The mechanism. And it's not taking for granted everything that exists around us all the time that we start to stop looking at, because we stop looking at it because it becomes all habitual. I walk downstairs every morning. Oh, the fridge is always in the same place. The wood stove's over there. Like, reach in this cabinet. I know exactly where the food is. How often do you like stop and actually look at all those things with more detail?
Right.
After a while, very little, probably. You know.
Right.
But if you come downstairs here one morning and you walk down those steps and you're like an anthropologist on Mars, and you're like, "Ooh, this is a cabinet." You know, this is, there's something, what does this do if I pull this? And, you know, you don't have to play it out like that, but it's like, you know, every time I reach up to that cabinet, my finger marks have left this little wear mark, you know, around the handle. Right. So it's like, oh, and I can look at all the cabinets and I'm like, I see exactly which ones I use way more than other ones. You know, it's like, wow, there's my pattern. My habitual patterns are all over this place when I'm looking around. It's scary.
And then you're tracking the tracker again.
Exactly. See, it's where I'm just a pain. You know, it's a big full circle story here.
Exactly.
I hope that that's just like a simple thing that kind of highlights some of the spaciousness and a little awareness exercise that is very simple to do that has kind of a exponentially growing shift that can take place in awareness. And it's really just as simple as that. And I wrote a Facebook post the other day about watching this dewdrop evaporate. Mm. You should read it if you haven't
read it. I did read it.
Read that?
Yeah.
This is what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that was awesome.
It's kind of like that.
Sitting with it.
Being with the dewdrop, relaxing into the peace of it, and noticing that subtle change that's happening that's so imperceptible, but everything else around it is alive and moving. And I'm not expecting, you know, a hawk to show up, you know, towards the end of this whole experience. You know, I'm not like, man, if I stay here long enough, I'll be rewarded with this hawk if I just wait patiently, right?
No. Right.
I'm just so absorbed that all of a sudden, you know, the call comes up above me and I look up at it and I'm just like, wow. And I look back and it disappears. And we have some ability to kind of be interacting with our world at that type of level,
right?
Much more regularly. And, you know, seeing everybody as that dewdrop, you know, and relating to them with that type of attention. There's a great quote that I heard at this conference, you know, when we give something that quality of attention, that is love in action. Attention, right?
I like,
you know,
that.
My son's 10 years old, and he knows exactly when I'm tuned in and attentive to him, or when I'm like, hey, you know, hold on, you know, or when I'm giving it that attention, you could feel the quality of love that's coming across in those relationships. And our attention is such a precious gift. Mm. And wherever we put our attention is where our energy flows, and that energy is love. So when we're giving our attention, not from like, I need to, I have to do this because that's love, but from, I'm open, I'm curious, I'm listening, I'm just in the flow of what's presenting itself, and being creative with the young child, you know, that's presenting this information to me. That's the energy of love that's encompassing that whole thing. And it's with a dewdrop that's evaporating in the sun. It's with our conversation, you know, it's looking at the paint on the wall or anything. That's a nice summary of the whole conversation in my mind of where we've been.
Absolutely. That's perfect. Just perfect. Thank you for that. So just to wrap it up, a few things. So what are two or more books that you might recommend for our listeners, George, if they want to explore this further or other aspects related to it?
Well, you know, for the inner tracking stuff, like I said, Paul, my mentor, he wrote the book Tracking the Art of Seeing. So if you want to get into tracking, that's a great book that blends in some of the tracking outward stuff with some inner tracking. It's a great field guide. All right. So that's a second edition book on that. And then his other book is The Wild Within, which is really his like inner tracking journey in his own life. How he lived and the discoveries he made, and the story is kind of interwoven. You know, each chapter starts off with some nature connection piece and then something about his life as he was coming into greater and greater awareness from, you know, someone who was living kind of like in complete ignorance of those patterns. So that's his story. And those two are from the world of tracking that discuss and describe inner tracking in a lot of the ways I've been talking about.
Nice. I'll second both of those books. That was when I first started getting into tracking more on the outer landscape. Paul's book, Tracking the Art of Seeing, was the first book that I got. That was the one recommended to me. So that's what I got. And so that kind of started me on my journey there. And then, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I got The Wild Within and read that and was just really enamored with it. So both of those are amazing books.
Yeah, great.
Thank you.
Nice, yeah. Definitely, those two. And, you know, for deeper, like, developing nature connection things that have inner tracking bent to it is, you know, H. Shields Institute, the work with John Young and all his mentoring stuff, because mentors who are developing, they really got to get involved with the inner tracking element. Because remember, where we put our attention is where that love is. And when we're in a mentoring relationship with young students, elders and mentors, older people or adults or whatever,
right?
You know, that inner awareness has to coincide at the same time as just teaching these skills, right? We're teaching something that that is like full transformation in all of life, not just these fragmented skill sets.
Right. Yeah.
So the inner tracking work is with John's work, and also learning just skill sets and deeper nature connection stuff. I highly recommend checking out a lot of the programs that are going on there with Wilderness Awareness School, with different naturalist training programs. You know, there's going to be some more exciting stuff coming down the path that him and I are, John and I are working on around this, that is, you know, going to continue to make this much more, even more and more accessible to larger audiences of people. Awesome. The inner tracking stuff more woven into all the deep nature connections material, and deeply having the inner processing journey much more transparent of how that's all connected. You know, so it's a full transformation. So we don't just jump from mindsets from like, you know, I'm living this way, I'm just going to adopt this new mindset, to one that is like, no, we've transformed our consciousness. We're not approaching a new bunch of information with the same consciousness that existed back here. Consciousness completely shifts to a totally new framework that has this deeper inner awareness that I'm talking about. So just to make that, you know, it's like, if you move out of a situation and you're like looking for wilderness skills, but your pattern that you're moving from has always been in this mechanistic way of thinking around things, you will approach that new topic, even if it's nature connection material, with that same mindset.
Right.
Plow through it like it's working on a machine. And if the inner tracking stuff isn't woven into that, well, then they just work through it like that. You know, it will slowly work those things down, but asking the right questions and helping to make that transformation a little bit more apparent, how it operates at the other levels that I've been talking to you about, helps to make it a fully transformational thing on the levels from the nature connection all the way to our interpersonal connection.
Right.
Those are some of the things we're working on.
Awesome. We'll look forward to that for sure. And so speaking of your work, how can people further connect with you and benefit from the work you're doing now?
Yes, Mindful Tracker is my website. So people can definitely contact me through the Mindful Tracker, and I got the Facebook page on there. I have an inner tracking group on Facebook, which I have to reinvigorate and get going. But there is a group on there that has a couple hundred people in there on inner tracking. And right now we're all observing silence because we haven't been talking very much on there. So we're all in a state of openness for sure. And that needs a little stimulation. And so that exists, the inner tracking Facebook page and group, the Mindful Tracker. And, you know, once we move out of the situation, you know, I love to be in the woods with people, you know, and I have an apprenticeship and I do a week long in the summer. And we just get out and we actually apply and do this stuff in the field with tracking and converse about all this stuff openly like we're doing, but take it out of just me talking like this format.
Right.
Seeing the mystery unfold before us as we go out together. And that's like where the magic of this, everything I've been talking about, is to life. You know, it's really happening.
Sounds amazing.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, those are my main pieces. And, you know, the Cyber Tracker evaluation for people, I do those as well. And although it's not a highly inner tracking oriented event, in terms of learning tracking skills with people, evaluators who work with whether they call it inner tracking or not, but have an awareness about how to handle a group in a discussion process that has this openness quality to it.
Yeah.
That's very much a part of that experience.
Absolutely.
You know, it couldn't work well if the evaluators weren't in that space of operating with people in a way to help them in their learning of tracking. So that's just a fantastic way to learn tracking from the most highly skilled trackers that I know of.
Absolutely.
You know, in North America. So it's a real gift that we have such amazing trackers from a lot of different areas who've come together through this organization called Cyber Tracker to share their collective knowledge and offer like this fantastic learning opportunity for people who are passionate about learning the skills of tracking. And like I said, that's just a doorway, if one so chooses, to continue the further exploration that I've been describing for the rest of this. But I'm deeply ingrained in the skill set of tracking. You know, I mean, I've pushed the skills very far in my own development, you know, in terms of learning the trailing, learning the ID. So that's part of my skill set that I carry and continue to foster and want to grow how tracking organically grows into the future and the future generations of how that body of knowledge that moves through me, you know, that all trackers exist within this body of knowledge.
Right.
Continues to flourish, you know, continues to be something that the future generations will have access to that knowledge base so that they carry on that body of information that's called tracking. So, you know, that's another thing I'm quite excited about, just as much as the inner tracking stuff. Because they're the same.
Exactly.
They're the same for me.
Full circle once again. Well, that's a good way to sign off. Really appreciate you coming on, George. Appreciate you sharing your knowledge and experience and, you know, walking us through this process, which I often feel like language fails to properly convey, but it's a fun process and highly beneficial, as we talked about. So appreciate you coming on.
I really appreciate it and all the work you're doing, you know, doing the podcast. I mean, it's just fantastic. So it's really great to make the connection and a real honor to be on as a guest and thankful to be able to share my passion in this way and with such great questions and, you know, comments that you brought along to help enliven and enrich this for all the listeners. So until next time, let's just keep in touch and, you know, put this out and let's see if we get some more interest generated in all this.
Sounds good. We'll be in touch. Thanks, George. Take care.
Well, friends, thanks for continuing to come on this journey with me. I hope you really enjoyed this episode. It's been real fun exploring these various aspects and facets of the tracking world, and I hope you're learning a lot along the way. And especially with this subject, George is just very prolific with the information he puts out about this subject and trying to help people just really delve into these ideas and principles to help them in their lives, really. So definitely go check out all of his materials online. Like I said, he's quite prolific. And you'll find links to all of his stuff in the show notes for this show, especially his Mindful Tracker website. He's got lots of programs going on there, so definitely patronize those and you know, get with him directly if that's something that you're interested in and able to do. He's got some really cool apprenticeship programs, like the Tao of Tracking, Peak Tracking, Inner Tracking Mentorship and Guidance, and then, of course, his Cyber Tracker Evaluation sessions for Track and Sign. And so definitely go check that out. That will definitely enrich your life in a very, very real way. The other things he's got going on, he's got quite a bit going on Facebook with the Inner Tracking Facebook group page. There's some really fun discussions that take place there. And then also he's got a newer page that he's been pretty active on called New Spirituality, and that's New, K-N-E-W, New Spirituality. And he's got that on both Facebook and Instagram, and you'll find links to those. And that's been really fun to follow for me personally anyways. He delves a lot into sacred geometry and the interconnectedness of all things and, you know, the energies in this world and how we're so connected to them and the fractals and just all that really neat mind-blowing stuff. Mind-blowing for me anyways. Definitely go check that out. That's fun. And also a lot of content on his YouTube channel. Leoniac Tracking is the name for of his YouTube channel, and especially the Inner Tracking series he's got, or it's not called Inner Tracking, it's called The Mindful Trackers. And it's quite in depth and long videos of just him and Paul Resendez, who's been his mentor for years, just exploring tracking and self-awareness ideas and principles as they're actually sitting and discussing them both indoors and taking walks out in the natural world, talking about tracks and relating them to this idea of inner tracking and tracking the inner landscape. So you can really dive deep into this through George's work, and then of course through Paul's work and others as well. This is a really neat and emerging understanding of the connectedness of tracking the outer landscape with the inner landscape. So definitely go check all that out. And of course, the book recommendations and all that are going to be linked on the show notes for this. So really, really hope you enjoyed all of this. Enjoy continuing to put these out and create these places or opportunities rather for learning and going deeper into how interconnected we are with the natural world, ourselves, the people and the world around us, and how we can continue to build ourselves through the medium of the outdoors and nature, which we are a part of, and we are nature. So thanks for coming along. Always appreciate shares through my social media posts. You can share those with the wide world. You can support us by going on and leaving reviews wherever it is you're finding this podcast, especially on Apple Podcasts. Really appreciate that. And then if you want to contact me directly, feel free to reach out. You can get me at ron@coyotespath.com. And until next time, happy trails.